a secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this: the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
Well, good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Friday morning. It's been a long week and we are ready for it to end, or at least for the weekend to begin, I think.
It won't end for a long time, Joe.
Well, I just mean the weekend or the week. Let's take it. We have to chunk it up.
A day at a time.
Yes, a day at a time. That's right. A day at a time. All right. So let me introduce our panel to you and we'll be ready to go. Alan Chartok is with us, WAMC's political observer, and good morning, sir.
Good morning. I've just been instructed by Roselle via the email to make sure everybody knows about the Women's March on Washington on January 21st. Yeah, January 21st.
Day after the inauguration.
All right. I'm done.
Good stuff. I would assume there would be buses coming down from this area and so forth.
It's being organized. There's stuff on Facebook you can find.
Excellent. Also, Alan's going to be down with me tonight. Andy Borowitz is at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie. We're going to do a funny show.
Yeah, that's funny.
We're going to do a funny show. Andy Borowitz, of course, best known for the Borowitz Report. We do have a few tickets left. If you'd like to join us, we'd love to have you there. Alan will be doing the introductions, and I'll be talking to Andy. And it should be great. Andy already has started up his president-elect cycle on the Borowitz Report. So we'll hear what he has to say tonight, and hopefully give a little levity to us all. So that is tonight in Poughkeepsie at 7 o'clock, and we would love for you to be a part of it. You can give a call 1-800-323-9262. Just press zero, ask to speak to Dina, and she'll take care of you from there. And although any of the voices that
anybody
you hear will be able to take care of you, and we think you'll enjoy that. Okay, Rosemary Armeo is with us. She is the head of the journalism department at the University at Albany, and she is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm happy to be here.
Long week. And I thank you very much. It's a delight to have you with us. We also have Barbara Smith with us. She is an author and activist, and we are thrilled to have her in our presence. Good morning, Barbara.
Hello.
How are you?
Well, I just want to say I'm looking forward to going to see Andy Borowitz in person this evening, but when you said it was going to be a really funny show, I said, oh, so what country's recent election will he be talking about?
See, no, but that's, see, that's funny.
See, that's funny. Well,
no, I can be funny.
No, look, we have a lot to. Andy has great stories about how over the years, fake stories that he has done have been picked up by the mainstream press.
I love it.
That's funny.
And the thing, that's why he's so good.
Yes.
Because everything is pitch perfect. His satire is pitch perfect.
I'm not saying it's going to be funny about the situation we're in now, but it'll be overall. There's other things to talk about that'll be funny. Hell, you can do 20 minutes just on Paul Ryan, can't you?
He has real genius. I mean, genius. As opposed to the rest of the common folk like us.
He's a great guy, and we're thrilled. And it was just, by the way, I think I've mentioned this before. I'll mention it again. He is doing this completely free of charge for us. Right. He is coming in. He is doing it. We are his radio station. He lives in he has a home in the Hudson Valley, and he's doing this as a labor of love, and we couldn't be more thrilled.
Wow,
so
that's great.
It's very, very nice. So we're just honored to have him.
And
with
while
us.
We're on the subject, shouldn't we say something nice about the Bardavon itself?
Well, the Bardavon too. They have made it. They have given us this place, and I don't know. We did this 4 years ago. But the Bardavon is one of the most beautiful theaters in all of our region, and that is a region filled with beautiful, gorgeous theaters, and this is one of them, and it's a stunning place, and we'll be there tonight. So I hope you can get and be with us all and join us. All right, so let us get to the work at hand, and that is to talk about what's happening in this world of ours. And we'll begin with the meeting between the President of the United States and the President-elect of the United States. Barack Obama and Donald Trump met yesterday at the White House. It was a meeting that Donald Trump described would only last 10, 15 minutes and ended up taking an hour and a half. The two were very cordial, were very complimentary of one another, and there was some information that has come out about the meeting, not a lot, but it seemed to be mostly transitional and fairly boilerplate as to the mechanics of getting everything together. Your thoughts on the meeting between the two?
Well, obviously, this is something that happens each time. And has to happen in order to assure the American people that there is a peaceful transference of power. We do know that President-elect Trump, to be fair, tweeted this morning or last night that the protesters, the many protesters who were out there,
all over the country,
which I think he sort of dismissed as being sort of small groups. We're just exercising their democratic rights.
Actually, he called them professional demonstrators stirred up by the media.
Yeah, he said that. That's true.
And then I think they took that post down and then they put on something else, maybe.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know if that was a post they took down.
Yeah. But the point really is that the one thing we've come to learn about Donald Trump is he'll say one thing and then do another. So let me give you an example. Remember that rally where the guy stood up and started, and they were escorting him out. And he said, no, it's his right, just escort him out. And he said, no, and I don't remember the exact words, no, beat him up. So in other words, you say one thing and then you replace with something else, at that moment. That's one of the problems with having a guy like that with his hand on the button.
Well, I give credit to Barack Obama and to Michelle Obama, who did what the Bushes did
for them
8 years ago, which is deep, deep, not quite so bitter as the divisions between this guy, because, of course, Bush never called on the basic qualifications of Obama to be in office. But he said we need a transition. This is in the best interest of the country. And so you do what you have to do, which is a good lesson to us unhappy members of the electorate.
But with this individual, I don't even see how that's real. One of the things that I heard, and I've been consuming so much media in the intervening days since I was with you on Wednesday, but one of the people was saying that he thinks that he probably also, that Obama probably said to him, if you're going to actually do this, you cannot be the inflammatory flamethrower that you've been.
Oh, yeah,
that's
like
what this person, this is a black, pundit, commentator, talking about it, and that's what he suspected was also said. That if you're really going to do this, you can't continue the way you're continuing.
Well, I'm not sure of that, Barbara, because I doubt that's the first time he's been told that, and he hasn't listened to his hired help, his own family. Why is he going to listen to, like, his
the president.
Mortal political enemy? Yeah.
Who happens to have the job that he...
Correct.
And has done the job that he is now looking
but,
at.
But, you know, he did behave presidentially. He, just like when he went to, he made his little trip to, his trip to Mexico, he acted with decorum and... I don't know.
There is
Hillary Clinton says keep an open mind and let him have a chance to govern.
So let us talk about a couple aspects of the trip. One is having to do with the and I found the story fascinating, is the lack of a press pool. As of what's tonight? Today is Friday. So as of Wednesday, and what I found interesting about the story is that for months, the Correspondents Association has been trying to work out a plan with all the candidates to work on pool coverage in case you win. And for the hectic, weird hours right after the election, there's a pool. And for the safety of the president, for the safety of all people involved, that schedule is kept private. So this would allow a pool coverage, and the Trump campaign would not allow that. They didn't talk. They would have no conversations regarding that. And then when it came down to, yes, he won, and the trip to Washington, there were no reporters who were allowed on the plane or any pool coverage to go. So pretty much the event was solely covered by those specifically, the meeting between the President of the United States and Donald Trump was covered by the White House press corps, while the meeting with Paul Ryan was covered by the Congressional press corps. And that's it.
I have a new take on this, and this is not surprising. Did you really think he was going to be good to the press? It also is a policy that was started by Barack Obama. The T between the two, the new, the incoming and the outgoing first ladies, was always covered until Barack Obama came in. And he then wanted to use staff coverage, which is his own, and the AP and other news organizations refused to set it out. So here's what I'm thinking. One, the public will cheer it. They don't like the press. They do like him. And second, do we really need stories about the teas and about the niceties? Don't do those stories. Get the hell out and go really do reporting on the policies and what this man is doing. I don't care if we see those stories. The only time pool coverage has been truly important has been during assassinations and assassination attempts.
But you don't know when those are going to be. That could have happened yesterday.
That's
afternoon.
Right. So we won't have the, you know, upfront coverage, the front row seat to the shooting of John F. Kennedy or to the shooting of Ronald Reagan. That's the only time pool coverage is important.
I'm surprised at you, Rosemary. You've been predicting all along that Trump was going to be hell on the First Amendment.
And he is. And he's shown it from his very first. He's not even in office. But I think instead of bemoaning it, which we did all through the campaign to no effect, we adjust. When the Washington Post was barred from his press conferences, what did it do? It went back and it assigned David Fahrenthold to look at his records, to talk to people who had actual dealings with him. And that was the best coverage of the campaign. So we all have to do that now.
Well, I'm sorry, Barbara. You.
Please. I was going to say that thing that you were focusing on about the coverage of the first ladies and first lady to be activities. I don't know that that's a major problem.
You know, it isn't. I don't think any of this coverage is. The handshake between the two guys. Why do we have to be there for that? What did we miss by not being there yesterday? What do we miss in most pool coverage?
Well, that's a problem. We don't know.
Right. It's a death watch, basically. You are there for emergencies.
Yeah, but also, I mean, the idea, and I guess...
We won't cover the turkey sacrifice, the turkey sparing this year, remember?
Well, do you think we'll even have that anymore?
I don't know. But is it a big loss if we don't have
turkeys, given where he's coming from? But it might be the opposite. We're gonna do a home slaughtering.
Well, I don't know.
Well, we'll have it this year because it's Obama. But next
you,
year.
Now
what
you
we're
started
about.
By saying you have a different take on this.
I have a different take than before, which is like, oh, woe is me, the press is under attack, blah blah blah, which is true, and it has been since Trump started campaigning, and we have abetted it. So now I'm saying, okay, we'll accept those rules. I'm not gonna rant and rave about it, but I'm I have suggestions for other things that reporters should be looking at since they won't be in the White House.
The one thing that
like voter suppression.
The one thing that I find to be interesting in all of this, though, is that, and I will give full credit to my wife who brought this up to me in our discussions in our. In our therapy sessions, our talk therapy sessions in the car over the last couple of days, but you also are taking away the one thing that he really wants, which is coverage, right? I mean, that's what he wanted in that election more than anything, is to be on television and to be that guy and to be able to say all of the things that he said, which is why he likes Twitter so much, because he has complete control over it. Mm-hmm. So the question that we were saying, you know, why didn't months ago when they were making fun of the press and he was calling out Katie Turr of, okay, go away.
Yeah, I believe that's what I'm calling for.
Yes.
Do what the Washington Post did. And stick with that AP policy. He may hand out little pictures, cute pictures of Melania and Barron in the White House and all that. We don't have to print them if we didn't take them.
I just want to read a paragraph from the story because I thought it was a lot more serious than. And also that there were other functions besides being on site for a disaster, an assassination or some other disaster like 9/11. What the story says is he was entirely out of sight on Wednesday. His aides said he was huddled with advisors at his offices in New York. His team has not put out a daily schedule or offered any detailed updates on how he has spent his time. They have not acknowledged phone calls or other contact with world leaders. Russian President Vladimir Putin sent a congratulatory telegram to Trump on Wednesday, Moscow spread the word. A phone call with British Prime Minister Theresa May was announced in London. The pattern was repeated for calls with leaders of Israel, Egypt, South Korea, and Australia. So I just think it might have a few other implications. But you're the journalist.
My point is that every one of those stories came out because he is not the sole source of information. And it may be to our advantage to start working those other sources, the ones in Moscow and central, the middle of America, where we have not been for years.
I always like to let you finish your sentence, Rosemary. I wanted to just say it's very disappointing, and it also points. I don't agree with you, first of all. I think it points the fact that this guy is going to be getting even with his enemies. The press is perceived by him as his enemy. It doesn't really matter. You may be right or wrong as to whether the people go along with on the plane or not. But it is a good example of where he's going in order to punish the press for what he considers to have been anti-Donald activity. And I suspect we're going to see a lot more of that.
I don't see that the two things contradict each other.
No, I do.
I think he is punishing the press. He will get away with it because the public doesn't like the press. And the press's reaction should not be to moan and groan. It should be to develop other sources and go after real stories.
Well, I don't think they're going to have any choice. The real question is, will they have the guts?
Anybody want in on whether they'll have the guts?
Because let me tell you something.
I believe that's what they will.
That's what this is going to be all about right now, guts. It's going to be about the press now saying, all right, you know, if he's done something, if he's coming up on a trial on his Trump University, or if we have information about his conflicts of interest with his businesses as he's coming in and saying he's going to put it into a, quote, this is a joke, blind trust for his kids, his adult kids to handle, you know, there's going to be a lot of material that can be used here. And I'm going to say that in times like these, people got to stand up.
Okay, again, I disagree with you. There's no lack of guts. Journalists are among the most energized groups. The journalism schools are getting more attention. Political reporters are. There are plenty of stories to go after. The question is credibility. Who's going to believe it if we print it or broadcast it?
Okay,
we'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back and continue on this conversation.
Suzanne takes you down to her place near the river. You can hear the boats go by, you can spend the night beside her, and you know that she's half crazy, but that's why you wanna be there.
Beautiful music this morning. Leonard Cohen, singer-songwriter, died at the age of 82 yesterday, a rock legend, so we'll be remembering him this morning. We'll be talking a little bit about him later on in our discussion. Meanwhile, we have a lot of letters from our first half hour, so let's go to those, and we'll continue the conversation as we go through the letters.
Okay, I just want to say something, if I may, Joe. I had 1,000 letters, 1,000 on my email yesterday, 1,000 letters, and there were people who were writing me and saying, how come you never read my letter? You know, 1,000 letters. How come you don't return my letters? I would still be working on all of them, so I've answered a couple. But and I don't know about the rest of you or how you handle this, but 1,000 letters is an immense amount of stuff, and I can't do it, and I don't think the rest of us
can. That's weeks of work.
Yeah,
I spent like 3 hours on them yesterday, and I think it's because of the election that it's especially heavy, and I like hearing what people have to say, but yeah, I can't do that every day.
1,000 letters, wow. Okay, so. We heard from a usual scold who says, I should hope the panel will condemn absolutely and without any equivocation those demonstrators engaging in destructive and violent behavior. Of course, he says, as he always does, liberal causes always deemed noble supersede law. So I am not holding my breath. Okay, you don't have to hold your breath. Although, if you want to hold your breath, scold, hold it for a long time. But here's what I'm going to say. I have always, always condemned people who resort to violence when protesting. I do it now. I've done it before. And keep on holding that breath.
I'm trying to think of a liberal cause that superseded law. Can you come up with one?
Superseded law?
Yeah, well, like the scold announced. He says liberal causes always supersede the law.
Oh, that's, well, yeah, there are some. We would go back to the civil rights era. When
civil disobedience.
And also when segregation was the law of the South.
Sure.
If not the law of the land, it was definitely the law of the South. So when those demonstrators sat down at the lunch counter in Greensboro, North Carolina, yes, they were indeed superseding the law.
It's well,
very vivid to me because I just visited the museum, which is the intact Woolworth store, the whole museum.
Oh, at
the store.
American,
yes,
the American History
in Greensboro.
Yeah,
in Greensboro, the actual room where it happened. So it was very vivid in my mind. Yeah, they broke the damn law, and thank God.
Civil disobedience.
Well, no, they broke the law, but violence is something that Martin Luther King and others just said no to.
Absolutely, and the thing is, I actually participated in the civil rights movement in the 1960s as a teenager. I was trained in nonviolence, and I've been committed to nonviolence ever since. Not everybody feels the same way. But the thing is that I abhor violence. I see violence as reductive. Violence reduces the human experience to nihilism and nothingness, obviously, because the end result or the ultimate result is that you're dead. So that's it. Zero sum. But the thing is that no, sometimes civil disobedience is breaking laws. It doesn't necessarily have to be violent, but sometimes people who have not, depending on your experiences, I was trained in civil disobedience and in nonviolence, so I have that capacity because I was trained.
I guess the disagreement with the writer is that he doesn't see civil rights as a noble cause.
Probably not.
Could be.
I
shouldn't jump to an assumption.
I think he was using noble cause as a sort of sarcastic.
That right.
And what I was trying to say about the younger people who are involved in this, they are from a different era. They never sat in a church basement and had someone older than them explain to them, okay, this is what you do when they spit on you. This is what you do if they shout epithets at you. Yeah. This is what you do if you never had that training, then, that ethos of a time. We knew in the civil rights era that if we had retaliated with violence, we would have been annihilated, and our cause would also have been lost.
Jameson says, Trump will need to build two walls during his presidency, one along the southern border to keep the Mexicans out, and one along the Canadian border to keep the Americans in. Cute.
Well done.
Harleen says, the winner in this election is Vladimir Putin. He put a know-nothing in the White House, causing distension in the CIA, FBI, and the American population. Ladies and gentlemen, there is some new information coming out about the extent of his holdings in Trump's holdings in Russia. And that's, as you said before, Rosemary, a very fertile ground for some investigative journalism.
And it's already underway. Like I said, there's no lack of stories or of guts to go after them. There's also a lot more information coming out about the extent of the Putin administration's contract with the Trump campaign.
During the campaign, yeah.
Yes, as Trump was saying, oh, no, I have nothing to do with the Russians.
Peter
says, troubling.
Okay.
Very.
Peter says, I want to crawl into a hole and die. But it occurs to me that after Trump has destroyed our economy and has enraged supporters, realize that his policies have only made them worse off, there will be an opportunity for a revitalized Democratic Party to reshape the future. The Republicans will be in tatters. And that's signed Peter. And, you know, already there are leaks to the press that who's lining up... God help us. Who's lining up to help us, to help the Democratic Party? People like, there was a piece in the paper today, the Daily News, that Andrew Cuomo is signaling that he may want to run for president.
Look, you know, I have to reject that. I hate Trump. I've made that clear. But I love my country. I don't want 4 years of destruction just so that Democrats can get back in. I would like nothing better than to be proven completely wrong and that the 20 million women who voted for him were right and that he's going to bring economic prosperity and peace and love everywhere. I hope that's true.
No. Okay. Let's hope that that's true. But what if it isn't true?
And it's kind of hard to have economic prosperity. It's kind of hard to have economic prosperity if you're female, if you can't control your reproduction.
I know all the arguments, Barbara. here's some of the hope. Working class people voted for him, and who make up a big old chunk of the working class? They are minority workers. Can Trump or someone in his administration bring the working class together so that they're united and have real power and voice, and we don't get into a situation like this where they've been cut out? That would be lovely. There's opportunities here. I'm trying to drink the Kool-Aid. It's in the glass in front of me. I'm trying to drink it. Barbara, help me out here. And so you have to look at that. The Democratic Party failed miserably. And the press failed miserably.
And when you see the people who Trump is lining up to be in his cabinet, I think you ought to think twice about what you just said. In any case, here is a letter.
Well, I think you can be hopeful no matter what the situation is.
I'm trying to be
in
perspective,
overwhelmingly
anti-Trump panel.
Wow.
Please, what is the info on the Women's March 121-2027? Why?
Just Google it. Google Women's Million. Yeah. You'll find it. There's Facebook pages for each locale that people are in.
Yeah. Donald Trump's vile campaign and resultant election have unleashed a maelstrom of hate. Proverbs 11:29, he that troubleth his own house shall inherit the wind, and the fool shall be servant to the wise of heart. Where is this country going? Trump is just biding his time, and that's from Andy. And then there is this letter, a little longer, but I thought it's worth reading, from Marguerite, who says, first of all, thank you to WMC for hosting the postmortem of the election. I got to meet the all-star panel. Alan was right. The future of WMC is more important now than ever. I intend to up my support and keep our station going. There is a note here from Andrew, who says, thank you for the panel. I listened on the podcast in the afternoon. I traveled home from a work assignment. It was moving, intelligent, and insightful. Having read the article on the front page of today's Berkshire Eagle, I can understand how there are people who voted for Trump because, quote, he speaks the truth. I know it's not politically correct, but I'm moved to think you can't fix stupid. I also think today is a good day to remember Martin Niemoller's Apologia. Okay, after listening to yesterday's panel, I couldn't help feeling that WMC is more necessary than ever. I'm going to increase my sustaining membership.
Can I say something, Ellen, about that letter that talked about the level of violence? And quoting, I guess, Proverbs from the Bible. There's a story that I shared with the panel this morning, which is campuses confront hostile acts against minorities after Donald Trump's election. It's in the New York Times, and I'm sure if you people are interested, they can Google it and find either that story or other coverage. But last night on both the nightly news and also on MSNBC, many of these incidents were recounted. There are junior high school, I say junior high school, it's middle school now, there are middle school kids in a cafeteria yelling, build the wall, build the wall, while their Latino and Latina classmates are crying. There are there's a plan, as I understand it, for a Ku Klux Klan victory march in North Carolina. There's a black woman whose van was vandalized, and I won't even say the expletives that were written on it, all, you know, in the name of Trump and invoking that ideology. That's why I'm not optimistic about maybe not everything will turn out all right, but maybe he can bring people together. Maybe it won't be as bad as we think. It's because it's so ideologically negative and hate-filled. So the possibility of, you know, he could be the great uniter of the working class in the United States. Wouldn't that be fabulous? Because that would bring in the majority of the people in the country. But the thing is that his ideology of hatred and contempt just doesn't match. And see, Bernie Sanders was a populist on the other side, but he was not espousing hate.
Fires in depicting men in camouflage wielding guns and an American flag appeared in men's restrooms throughout Texas State University with the words, "Now that our man Trump is elected, time to organize tar and feather vigilante squads and go arrest and torture those deviant university leaders spouting off that diversity garbage."
Yeah.
Well, there is no question that there's a whole group of schadenfreudists who, you know, who are coming out from under the rocks right now, and we are seeing it all the time. Jeannie says, does anyone want to guess how long until Trump tries to have a reporter arrested or jailed? We could set up a betting pool. Rosemary?
Soon as possible, soon as he is able to.
Lori says, the BBC News just announced that Trump stated that the protests were unfair. Even after he won the election, he and his supporters think everything is rigged. Two question marks. More important, please give information on the Women's March in January. I cannot find any information online on the WMC website. Hey, it's just come about. And Rosemary, you're correct. Google it, Women's March on Washington. You'll get it.
Yeah, in other words, to the listener, don't go to the WAMC website. It may be up on our website at some point.
But the thing
is that this is so new, you have to just put in the general search, put it into your general search engine and find it that way.
It's on Facebook and Google. I found it this morning.
Thank you for your wonderful coverage of this debacle. Agree with Joe. The press created this monster. It's time to ignore him and deny him what he wants. Oh, yeah. So the
Joe
press
said that?
No, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think I said that, but that's all right.
People say we all say things.
Yeah,
that
yeah I don't.
There's no way. There is no way.
You said that, I would have jumped on that.
There's no way. There's no way the press can ignore the president of the United States, or should in a campaign.
If they're referring to yesterday, I said that there was a very early on in the campaign when they did go unchecked and they just
it was a big giant mistake.
You know, rally after rally after rally and covering none of the other candidates. I did make that point.
Cable television.
Yes.
Christine says, "Dear panel, thanks for being there. I was just breaking radio and media silence. I'm going to rise up and work harder to protest the outcome." And that's from Christine.
Yeah, I mean, I'm being Pollyanna today. Where's Teresa? That's her role. She's good at that. But one thing that is coming up is a new commitment from a lot of...
I wanted the same thing.
I wasn't a shot. I like that. That was... She is a self-proclaimed Pollyanna, in fact. But one thing that's you're seeing in social media is a new commitment to being in the opposition and to protecting and standing up for and even intervening in any case that we personally see of our colleagues at the university being attacked like those children were at school. I've not seen that before, too. And in adversity might come a different kind of unity, and that's between the genders and the races. I hope so.
I want to see what the new Giuliani time is going to look like. If indeed Giuliani is going to be the Attorney General, it'll be very interesting to see just what he does in that role. Tony says, after his concession speech talking about bringing all America together, Americans together, his tweet regarding the protesters was the opposite, says our friend Tony. Stephen says, it's better for the press to be independent of the White House. The coziness that has heretofore existed between the press corps and the White House leads to journalists pulling their punches. The Washington Post and the New York Times coverage got much better once Trump cut them out of the loop.
Hear, hear.
We're going to pause you there and take a break. We'll come back. We'll read more letters and we'll get on to other topics as well. We welcome your thoughts. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Barbara Smith. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Just a reminder, we did change our email address, so if you're using the old address, stop. It's panel at WAMC.org, P-A-N-E-L, panel at WAMC.org. And eventually the other one won't work anymore, so you got to start using the new one, panel at WAMC.org.
Catherine writes a very important letter. Dear panel, please comment on today's New York Times front page story about climate change and Trump. Trump on record is calling climate change a hoax, wants to appoint Myron Ebell, oil industry mouthpiece, as EPA head with the sole purpose of dismantling it. He wants the U.S. to cancel its agreement in the Paris Accords and on and on. The upshot is that this one ignorant, arrogant man is on track to tilt the entire planet towards climate catastrophe.
That's right.
Yes, that happens to be.
That's exactly what his plan. I mean, yeah, sure.
Well, can we talk for a second about the news that was percolating yesterday, which has been thought of for a while, but it was more or less confirmed that the two choices before him for chief of staff are Steve Bannon and Ryan Priebus. And that what we heard from two media reports, one from CNN, one from NBC, saying that while Steve Bannon is Trump's first choice, he sees him as the architect of the
Corey Lewandowski. You left out
what?
He's one of the possibilities.
Yeah, she was the third choice.
Yes. Well,
that has been announced. Yes.
Of what?
Of chief of staff.
Of chief of staff?
Because it was quite clear.
He may be the compromise.
Okay.
Person.
Because I know that the Ryan Priebus was thought of by the Trump of his family and his transition team.
The reasonable people among the crazies.
That they
Sorry,
felt.
I can't say that anymore.
That he should be the person, whereas Bannon. But, I mean, Bannon's work with Breitbart and on climate change is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's as frightening as one could ever imagine.
The very
idea that someone who is an avowed member of the far right wing in this country, a certified hate group, certified by the Southern Poverty Law Center and other entities that track this kind of activity, that he is up for possibly being chief of staff of the President of the United States. We have gone far down the rabbit hole.
Well, you know, the right choice here is Reince, no question, because he'll be more acceptable to more people, and people will not be quite as frightened as they would be with the first choice. So all I got to say is, what does he want to achieve? Does he really want unity or not?
And Reince Priebus is not a member of a recognized hate group. Can you imagine the ideology? I keep using that word. The fact that you would have somebody who is an ideologue for far right bigotry and hate thread in that position, that's just beyond. And it's not, if people are listening and thinking that I've just found this out. No, I knew that this was being discussed. It's just that it's so outrageous. It's just
we're talking about the destruction of the planet. And we did not talk about it during, remember the debates? When do we talk about this? Or many of the stump speeches, we talked much more about emails and about trade agreements. And this is really frightening. And there's a long history in the Republican Party. All the people are saying, get over it. We lived through worse when our guy didn't get picked. And I keep thinking about Ronald Reagan. He came in. The first thing he did was take down the solar panels on the White House that Jimmy Carter put up. Think where we might be on alternative energy development if there had been a Democrat.
Well, if you think that's bad, I mean, what about 20 million people who are going to go over the health care rolls? What happens to them if he keeps his word on that? Yeah. What happens
what happens to the military man if he really keeps this promise to go after and crush ISIS? Because that's war on the ground.
By the way, while keeping out of foreign entanglements.
Yeah, while keeping out of foreign entanglements.
Yeah. Yes, all these
hard
things.
To be hopeful.
Stephen says,
"Are you getting less and less so as the hour goes on?"
I did that, you know, in the program right after the election. I did the same. I had a whole list. I wrote it out. So it's like these are things to look forward to. This is great. And then it just I woke up and John Bolton as Secretary of State, Ben Carson, who is a climate denier and he doesn't believe in evolution, Secretary of Education, a department that the Trump doesn't even want to exist. Yeah, it's a little bit hard to be hopeful.
Yes, all these things we need to see, says Stephen. The pomp, the circumstance, the extraordinary and the mundane. It's humanizing and places this brutal man in a civilized setting and behaving admirably. Something I really need to see. My candidate is leaving office. My candidate got the popular vote, but not this election. Both were more dignified, so I want to see this man fit that dignity after hearing months of increased excrement. And that's Stephen. All right.
Two words or three, Trump on the bus with Billy Bush.
Yeah.
I may be prospecting, says Jeff, but I thought, I'm so sorry. I may be projecting, says Jeff, but I thought Trump looked scared both yesterday in D.C. and 3 a.m. on election night, as if even he is realizing what has happened. He didn't want to be president. He just wanted to win the presidency. He wanted to be president, folks.
I think that's a trope. It isn't true. And the look you see is a man trying his hardest to be respectful.
Hi, Alan and panel. I think Rosemary has hit on the key issue. How is the media going to be able to do its job if half the population refuses to believe the reports, no matter how accurate any revelations may be? That's a great point. You know, one of the reasons I knew, and one of the reasons I kept suggesting that Trump was going to win this election, was I kept looking at that 40% that all the polls had.
Never wavered.
It never moved, not for a second. And boy, that, no matter what happened on the bus with Billy Bush, no matter one of those things, that 40% stayed constant.
Right.
Okay. As we have seen from the election coverage, no matter how salacious any offense by President-elect Trump, it was dismissed by half the population as either not relevant or false. This is the scariest part of the situation for me, and that's from Greg. And Claude says, yes, the press should cover only the important issues regarding Trump and delve deeper beyond his actions and remarks. He can be sure, however, that Fox will continue to love him, and they represent his base, and that's from Claude.
All right, and we're going to take a break. We're going to hold. We'll come back for our final half hour, and we'll take a quick news break. We'll be back right after this. We still have your Take Your Letters panel at WAMC.org.
Like a bird on the wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir, I have tried in my way to be free. Like the worm on a hook, like a night from some old-fashioned book, I have saved all my ribbons for thee.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and we have Barbara Smith here as well. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, coming in, hearing the music of Leonard Cohen, a Canadian-born poet, songwriter, singer, and he passed away yesterday at the age of 82, and actually died on November 7th. I take that back. He died on November 7th. It was reported yesterday, I should say. So it was death confirmed yesterday. Details not known, but so we remember him this morning. We're going to go back and just hit a couple of these issues. One of the two things I want to go to real quick. One is the fraud case. We found out yesterday that the lawyers for Donald Trump are seeking to delay the fraud case until after he is sworn into office. Attorneys for President-elect Donald Trump went to court on Thursday to ask that a civil fraud suit against Trump, scheduled to begin in less than 3 weeks, be delayed, a reminder of the unusual complications facing Donald Trump as he shifts from businessman to commander-in-chief. Trump's attorney said he will be too busy with the presidential transition to participate in the November 28th trial involving his defunct real estate seminar program, Trump University. They asked that the trial be postponed until February or March after he has taken office.
Don't you love that he'll be less busy when
less
he's
busy
president?
When he's actually in the office trying to get those 100 days in. But, yes.
Prediction, he gets away with it. In other words, they will acquiesce to that. The real question in all of this is, and we saw it in Watergate too, will there be courageous judges who stand up and spit in the eye of authority and say, no, you know, he's a citizen like everybody else is a citizen, and if he did bad things, he has to be responsible for it? Or will they tremble and go another way?
This is the judge Gonzalo Curiel, who was mocked openly for weeks and weeks and weeks by Donald Trump. What does he have to lose?
I think Trump will do the same thing that Bill Clinton did, which is to settle ahead of time, get it all. He gave $750,000 to Paula Jones, and that's what Trump will do. Is he will pay these people off and go in, and his defense will be, well, I was too distracted, I couldn't spend time on it. I would have won, but, and his defense lawyer said, Judge, I'm listening to you, when the judge brought up the idea of a settlement.
Well, you're probably right. I hope you're not.
Trump used the settlement for Paula Jones as proof of guilt, so Democrats still have that. If he pays anything, then he will be painted as guilty.
The other issue I wanted to get to is one that Rosemary sent to me yesterday. We touched on it a little bit, but not a lot this morning. So the headline is Trump presidency could be worth $14 billion to his troubled lender. And this is Deutsche Bank, the German financial firm that has been rocked recently by rumors that they would have to pay a $14 billion fine to the Justice Department over crisis-related mortgage abuses. That money is unlikely to ever be imposed now that one of Deutsche Bank's biggest borrowers, Donald Trump, will soon be sitting in the White House. The conflict of interest is one of the innumerable ones facing Trump as he leaves his life of grifting behind and becomes the nation's chief executive. While the Justice Department is nominally independent of the White House, it's a bit of an editorial, but I do want to go through.
What does grifting mean again?
Stealing.
Being a con man. The cash.
Yeah. Grifters.
Yeah, con men. That's a good definition.
Through virtually every bank in the world to finance as many projects, Trump settled on Deutsche Bank as a lender of the last resort. The private bank division of the firm has lent Trump $364 million in mortgages on his Doral Golf Club in Miami, hotels in Chicago and Washington in the last few years, and at least $2.5 billion to Trump's affiliated businesses since 1998. With another $1 billion in loan guarantees, the recent loans on the three properties all come due before 2024, but they could be renegotiated, as is common with commercial loan enterprises.
There must be a lot of German beer being consumed at Deutsche Bank in celebration right now. I gotta tell you, it doesn't stop with Germany. No. We know it exists in Russia. We know it exists in China and Ukraine. So there are all of these interlocking business arrangements by Trump and his creditors.
So when he attacked the Clinton Foundation, he knew whereof he spoke, because he's involved in much more direct conflicts of interest. And he won't, of course, as president, get involved in the fine against Deutsche Welle. However, the attorney general will. It'll be his handpicked attorney general and his children involved in it. So how do you insulate him from the business of government? And how does it protect you, working class people, that a big offender like this is going to get off? He hasn't yet. I guess you can say that to me. But the potential for mixing business with government is immense, and I feel like it's East Europe all over again. I know this pattern. And I would point out that The Intercept, which published this article, is by the publication put out by Glenn Greenwald, who brought us Edward Snowden and the NSA leaks. So there you go. People are looking at Trump. Will it do anything? Will it make any difference at all? Here's a good example.
Well, these appointments are going to be crucial. The tabs are saying this morning, or at least one tab is saying this morning in New York, that while he said he was going to reappoint Preet Bharara during the campaign, the end days of the campaign, they're now saying he is not going to appoint Preet Bharara, and they're naming people who are very close to Trump and to his group. Who might possibly do that. Remember Judge Mukasey? This is the son of Mukasey now.
I did not know that.
The stuff
I'm shocked.
Is creeping out. We'll see.
Welcome to the hellscape. I mean,
Didn't he promise
this
the
is
end
what
of...
I said. I'm so sorry to interrupt.
No, I interrupted you. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is what I said a few days ago, which is that we have no idea of the full magnitude of what it is we are going to be subjected to and the implications of what has just occurred. Every day that unfolds, because we're doing a panel on the radio, we had a set of articles as we always do. We're talking, this conversation that we just had was catalyzed by a discussion about Deutsche Bank. Now we're talking about Preet Bharara, a U.S. Attorney. And it's just like tentacles, and it's just like, I'm sorry, I'm having a meltdown here.
Yeah.
Because it's so pervasive, so complex, so dangerous, and so not in any way a functioning democracy. It's just, the things we're talking about don't sound like a functioning democracy. I'm thinking, it's so great that Rosemary has so much experience in the Balkans, so she has a template for being able to understand what we're looking at. That's a sad commentary to say. Good thing you know about Eastern European corruption.
Trump promised the end to crony capitalism. He blamed that on Democrats, and he's the biggest crony of them all. I'm sorry. This is I get letters saying, you're a self-absorbed liberal who thinks you're better than everybody else. I'm not. I'm stunned that you don't see this, too. You read the same things I do. I don't know how we got into this situation.
What do you think? We were talking about the banks. We've been talking about the Trump University civil trial, fraud trial. What about the sexual harassment? Some of those women are bringing civil suits.
Will they? Will they
now? I don't know.
As president of the United States, wouldn't you, as a lawyer, say, "Look, the game's changed a little bit. You got to think about this."
I was thinking about that, and I think you're right, Rosemary. Although I don't like to say that, I think that, I think there will be people who will say it's just too big for me to take on.
Right, and then all of his supporters will say, "See, they were just trying to affect the election."
Let's go to a couple more letters.
Boy, do we have letters! I have a stack in front of me, Joe. That has to be, 300 letters.
It's amazing how many letters.
Okay. Hi, panel. Hate crimes are up. Horrible racist graffiti and threats were found on Mount Tom in East Hampton, Massachusetts. There is capital letters, peaceful rally and march in Springfield, Massachusetts, November 13th, 12 to 3 in Court Square. Come one, come all from Betsy. The 1980 election of Ronald Reagan was worse. That his inauguration should occur in the same year that AIDS was first reported was an epic tragedy. The personal pain of watching hundreds of friends die while Reagan and his henchmen and his first lady laughed at the tragedy and ignored it. It was all far worse than anything that Trump has to dish up, no matter how bad his presidency turns out to be.
That's end of the
true.
Planet?
That is so not true.
No,
I say that as a person who was in deep despair when Reagan was elected.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that despair continued is because I also lost, I wouldn't say hundreds of friends, I lost dozens of friends
right.
in the AIDS epidemic at that time that was unacknowledged by the Reagan White House. Mm-hmm. But this is so much more pervasive to me. That is Trump's ideology, his connections to the far right wing, et cetera, et cetera. We don't have to be in, as they say, an oppression Olympics. But I just would ask that listener, think about all the different things we just talked about this morning. And the AIDS epidemic and health care, et cetera, that's actually a part of what will come to pass with the evisceration and the destruction of the Health Care Act. Do you see what I'm saying? I just want
yes.
the listener
mm-hmm.
to think about there are bigger pictures. There are people dying that will die. Hundreds and thousands of people will die.
Dear Joe, this morning you said that the pressure to avoid giving Trump the publicity he craves, in different words, I agree, it is oxygen to him. Well, I'm telling you folks, you got to cover the president of the United States. And if he says something that's particularly obnoxious, it's got to be in the paper. You can't not do it because it affects the body politic.
You can do it. He'll put it on Twitter. People are not reading newspapers.
Yeah, right. But it'll get to a lot of other media. Beth says it took Hoover to get a Roosevelt.
Hmm?
Interesting. In other words, it took Herbert Hoover to get Roosevelt elected. Yeah, that's true. Since the popular vote says...
By the way, Ellen,
yes.
The Hoover administration was the last time that one party controlled the White House, both houses of the legislature and the Supreme Court.
Oh.
How'd that work out?
Yeah, it went well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that true? I mean, I'm thinking about Roosevelt as his time went on. I think he had both houses of Congress, didn't he?
Never had the Supreme Court. He wanted to fix the Supreme Court.
Well, he did.
Packet.
In a way, look, I mean, I've studied that a great deal. He did. He got his way. What happened is that a lot of the guys who he was objecting to got off on their own steam. Okay. Monell says, since the popular vote does not seem to count in a presidential election, why should we bother to vote at all? Because obviously, while you're right that the popular vote really ought to be the definitive answer— We all know that if you don't vote, you don't win in the Electoral College either. So you have to vote, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
And it depends on where you're voting, too. I mean, for that the person who wrote that letter, voting does make a difference. Elections do have consequences. But not voting because there's an Electoral College, one thing is
sense.
Connected to the other. Popular votes determine Electoral College results.
Okay. I'm not using nicknames for Trump. Forget it. Don't do that. Dear panel, are we beginning of a slippery slope towards fascism? That is a great question. And it scares the hell out of me. And I think if Rudy Giuliani is going to be the Attorney General of the United States, you are going to see the possibility that that is so, that we are on a slippery slope towards fascism. Sharon goes on, we have a mean-spirited, bigoted bully in the White House. He scapegoats, and I've heard he's going to open his own Trump propaganda channel on cable to spout his lies and poison the minds of people who watch. Do we have enough safeguards to prevent our slow-motion, violent slide into the scary scenario? And genuinely frightened from Sharon. Good morning. Yesterday, the stock market closed record high. Just saying. It is interesting.
What is it that he is saying?
What? No, he's saying, look, I expected that if Trump won, there was going to be a diminution in the stock market. But what's puzzling to me is quite the opposite. The stock market has gone up, and many of us are going to be celebrating our additional resources.
Well, you know better than most, Alan, that you don't judge what's happening. There's no trend yet after three days.
No, that's quite right. Good morning. Yesterday, the stock market, we did that. Just saying. Harry from Chestertown. Panel, social media is already filled with incidents of bullying and intimidation by the Trumpensies against people of color, gays, and Jews. My advice for all of us is to stand up to the bullies right then and there, verbally or physically if necessary. Stop whining and posting about these incidents and deal with it at the moment. Bullies stop bullying when confronted. Defend yourselves immediately. And that's from Harv. I don't agree with you, Harv. I think it is important to do both. I think it's important to stand up at the moment, but I think it's also very important that people know that it's going on.
So when you're being followed by this down the street, you're a Muslim woman, and you're being followed down the street by two white males who are yelling anti-Muslim epithets at you and then rob you, who's supposed to be standing up? Where's
well,
that
no,
person?
I don't think
well,
that's
no, that's a very good point. But if you're the Shartok twins coming the other way, you might want to get involved.
What were you going to say, Joe?
No, I mean, I think that there's, I mean, that's a, you can paint it with too broad a brush. It depends on the situation. And if your safety is in question,
right.
then you have to do what's
always,
best for you.
Yeah,
you know,
we always need to speak up against injustice if we have that opportunity. There are some situations of threat and violence where that's just not the option, you know? It's that's why violence is so dangerous and so negative, because you can't always defend yourself. There's not always somebody who's well-meaning standing by to help you.
And that's why we need law and order and stop and frisk, Barbara.
Okay, Rosemary.
Good morning, panel. There's a rumor going around social media that Trump has pledged to turn down his salary as president. Does anyone on the panel know if it's true? I think it's irrelevant.
It's yeah. one of the many yeah. things that he said on the campaign trail that we do not know whether it will be true or not.
Yeah. Hi, panel. Is anyone on that panel listening to Hillary's advice to go into this with an open mind? It doesn't sound like it from where I'm sitting.
I quoted it. I've said repeatedly, we're trying. It's only been a couple days. You know, the Republicans griped about Obama for 8 years. So if we take 8 days, forgive us.
Well, Chris says, what do you think the odds are that a Trump administration within the first year will either allow a terrorist attack to happen or will court a cold war with Russia or a real war with North Korea in order to gain the kind of political power and public support George Bush enjoyed after 9/11? Well, his investments are in Russia. How can he do that? Now Korea becomes another thing. But, you know, there's something strange about Korea. Maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong. Don't they also share a border with China? And if they do, if Trump takes on North Korea unilaterally, one way or the other, that creates a big problem with China. Doesn't it?
I think MacArthur had that problem.
Yes, he did. He did. Same thing, right? My son has worked in China for 4 years. He's excellent health insurance, even though he had pre-existing conditions. He may not return home next year if the Republicans allow insurance to be denied because of pre-existing conditions. As he sees it, his choices are to stay in China or to find work in some other country, Europe, Australia, Canada, civilized countries. But he wants to come home. And that's from Jim. How about the idea that this election was actually a referendum on the administration of George W. Bush? Much of Obama's challenge has been dealing with the Great Recession and the foreign wars created by the Bush administration, both situations that the Trump campaign blamed on Obama. We Americans seem to always attribute events to our current government. I have just, says Judy, begun to listen to news today, as a previous writer stated. My question is, if it is indeed true that Hillary won the popular vote, no, we know that, now it is time to revisit the Electoral College? Now, is it time to revisit the Electoral College? Do I understand the rationale for its creation? I believe it may no longer be needed or desirable.
The Republicans in both House and controlling the Supreme Court. That would be just a fantastic time to bring it up again.
What would
be the impetus?
That's exactly right. And the other thing I want to say, and I've said it many times here, is during many elections, I heard from the Democrats about getting rid of the stupid Electoral College. But in this election, where it looked like Hillary was going to win because of the Electoral College, I heard nothing, capital N.
I was one of those people. Chagrin.
Good morning. This will include widespread use of stingray devices, secret searches of our homes and property, stop and frisk, a wall of blue larger than Trump's Mexican wall, and a police force militarized to the point of having flashbangs as standard issue equipment. Well, maybe not as bad as this, but I would not put it past them. And that is from Alex. Right now we are forced, says Mark, on groups of people protesting. I'm sorry. Right now, we are focused on groups of people protesting. Do you believe that we will see an increase in states protesting each other in similar ways to Governor Cuomo's state employee travel ban to North Carolina? What could this do to the economy? And that's from Mark. Oh, boy. All right.
Time for one more.
Okay, Kathy says, I am amazed, capital amazed, at the number of my libertarian friends, small business guys, who all of a sudden are terrified of losing their Obamacare.
Yeah, apparently enrollments are skyrocketing.
Yeah.
And gay and lesbian people are wondering if they should get married before they plan before it's gone as a right.
We're out of time. I want to thank everybody who joined us this morning. Thanks to Alan and Rosemary and Barbara. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.